Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Ian Kidwell on the board. S&P futures up 1275. NASDAQ futures up 123. Dow futures down 11. So we got a mixed market. We had the FANGs going up yesterday. We had the FANGs up yesterday. For the first time kind of in a while. We had Amazon up like $70. Amazon up like $70. Google was up. Those guys were all up. Haven't seen a big move in those guys for a while. We had the Apple up as well, so maybe they're coming back into taking a little bit of leadership. I don't know, we'll see. But it was kind of interesting to see them all moving to the north again. And it's amazing to me how don't take this as any kind of trading advice, because it's Tesla is a company that's obviously all into all kinds of different things, so it's kind of hard to put any sort of a feel on what exactly the market is looking at. I'm reading anecdotal stuff and I'm learning some stuff since my, brother Dan, president of PTI, has a bunch of clients that are trying to put together essentially a portfolio of stocks that are into the electric car business. And they're doing pretty good, but it also means we're learning an awful lot about a lot of these companies. And it sure seems like, Tesla's not anywhere near as far ahead of other companies, at least according to the research that those guys have done, as everybody leads them to believe. I mean, General Motors is pretty close to them on batteries, from what I gather. And so it's like Volkswagen and other places. And it's not like, I think they still have a lead of some kind, but I don't know that it's, one's a bazillion times earnings and one isn't type of pricing. And it'll be interesting to see what the quote market does with that over a period of time, because it is, do we have Mr. Liu?
Yes, sir. How are you?
All right. How are you?
Good. Sorry. I kept calling the 888 dial-in number, and it rolled to voicemail.
Lou, there's things that, like, shall we say, a mature dude like yourself, there's things that you think are somewhat simple in this world. Let me just help you. They're not. You would think that, like, 800 numbers are easy. They are not. To get one ported from one place to another. Now, why people decided to do this to make it hard for people to do it is probably a 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 month project. And when it gets to the new place, you now have to pay for it. And now, of course, it still doesn't work. But you would think that when we got the 800 number 10 years ago, I went online, I got it, we had it in like 3 days, and it worked for a decade. That's not the way the world is anymore, in case you haven't figured this out.
Well, I don't know what that thing is connected to.
Neither do we.
The voicemail on it, the recorded message that tells you the number you've reached is not working, is, I believe, probably from the 1970s.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that style of recorded communication. And the first time I heard it, I thought, wow, I'm guessing that AT&T or whoever owns this has no idea that it has one of these things still in its system. Well, but it's pretty funny.
Well, the phone lines, we have it's kind of an interesting system. We have, obviously, all the stuff from PTI is together in a very tight-knit group, right? And we had this one firm forever, and everything worked fine. All of a sudden, they get bought by another firm. And I don't think the people who bought them even knew we existed. So everybody we talked to after, like, last year, is from India or someplace. That's where we have to find people if ever was a problem. But it really never was a problem. So then, of course, AT&T comes in the building. which they hadn't been before. And they say, look, for like the same price or like less, you guys, we can like triple your speed. You know, it's been a while. And of course we got all these quote machines and everything. So the idea of triple the speed is not a bad idea. So it takes, with the COVID and everything, it takes like months to make this happen, like months. And nothing, I mean, I don't know how many hours my brother and other people put in on this. So sure enough, the thing comes in, and somehow anecdotally with the PTI system, totally separate, because we want it totally separate, is the Stocks and Jacks system. Because I have one copper line that runs just to our machine that runs out to the people who, that house the show, and when everybody looks at it later, that's where they go to. So I don't want anybody being able to hack anywhere, so it's one line that walks across the office by itself, right? And I'm old school enough to know that you don't want to have that anywhere else. So we have like three phone numbers that come into Stocks and Jacks, three or four. So all of a sudden they come in and they hook all the PTI stuff up and they have this big phone, you know, router and all this stuff. Well, next day none of our phones work. What'd you guys do? What do you mean? What about these three numbers? What three numbers? What do you mean, what three numbers? They're coming through the same system. So then it took, I don't know how long to get those going, but now they don't hunt from one to the other. So if you call one in, and like Jan Flanagan calls in because he wants to be on with you or Carl, all of a sudden, all they get is a busy signal. It doesn't jump from one to the other. What takes like a month for AT&T to figure out how to hunt those lines. Now, the 800 number now is a total. What do you mean? How do we get the 800 number over? Lou, this has been ongoing now for months.
And so, it's a little reminiscent. I watched this happen at one of my old firms where we converted over from standard hardwire systems. They were pretty hard line too, given that we were a bunch of attorneys. Hardwire systems to VoIP, and I remember telling the management people in our office in Chicago that something to the effect of, we're going to regret this. And they said, but it's so much cheaper. And I said, we're going to regret tying our phone system to the internet.
Right.
Okay. And I mean, this is now, fortunately, most of my clients were millennials. And so they used email and text messaging rather than phone calls. But the minute we switched it over, we lost connectivity. Not only lost connectivity to the phone system, we lost internal connectivity to all of our offices. And it took a couple of days to reestablish that. And, you know, this was in the time frame, in addition to switching over to VoIP, we had also moved all of our databases and apps and everything else into the cloud so that we didn't have licenses for software on our individual laptops or work desk stations. And of course, once the internal internet connection was severed, intranet connection severed, none of us could do anything. we couldn't type documents. We couldn't look at spreadsheets. We couldn't handle billing. That's whatever got everybody's attention. We couldn't handle the billing requirements.
got everybody's
attention.
What good is a lawyer that can't send a bill?
That's exactly right. I mean, what's the whole point of this? Anyway, the upshot of this was that the VoIP system basically restructured our whole phone connection, and there were connections that hardwire connections that our phone vendor didn't even know about, that had been some legacy system that they had acquired and started administering but had never bothered to write down. So when they severed the wire, they severed all kinds of stuff that, you know, it sort of existed, but nobody really thought about checking into them. It was the worst. It was like a Y2K nightmare, you know, with all of your systems failing to flip over on midnight, 2000. The complexity of these kinds of systems escapes, you know, everybody except probably really long-term managers or technicians who have, and they're highly idiosyncratic. So if you don't have the guy, you know, who was responsible for putting your system in originally, if you don't have him or don't have access to him, or when he left, he didn't leave very good notes, you're dead. It's going to take somebody to go back from the ground up and rewire or retrace the wiring for your legacy system to in order to figure out how to plug it into the, you know, to the new stuff that they're trying to put in there, the new digital technology.
Well, unless you're, I think what you kind of missed there is the only way you get a feel for what's going on is if you have to deal with it somehow. And the interesting part is, there are a lot of interesting parts, but one of the more interesting parts to me is how they're so tied up, how their head is so far up the ass of government on this. Quick story, just because it's somewhat interesting if you don't know how radio technology works. For years, the gold standard of a place like ours, or even any place, if you did a satellite radio thing at a bar or something, there was something, I'm going brain dead here, but it's not an ISDN line, but there's some other kind of a line that it's a digital line, essentially two numbers that you get. And there was a box called a Telos box, which was the industry standard for years and years and years, Lou. So what it essentially came down to was as you talked into your phone or anything into our system here, like if I'm talking to the mic, this is all analog. Right? And then when it goes into this box, it changed the analog to digital and pumped over copper wires, it pumped digital to say when John and I were on the score or when Matt and I were on all these other different stations we've been on from time to time. Literally, you were in the studio. The clarity is dramatic. It's a copper wire into the, you know, to the street and whatever. And you can go, I mean, if you're on in Phoenix, as soon as you hit the button on the Telos box, I mean, if a guy's sitting there drinking coffee, you can damn near drink his coffee. That's how clear it is in the place. And then, all of a sudden, AT&T decides, because they own all the copper wire in Chicago, the old copper wire. They decide they don't want to be in the copper wire business anymore. So instead of selling it to somebody, like they did in Denver, I believe they sold it all to Hughes. So in Denver, you can still get copper, I believe, because it's a new company. But in Illinois, they decide they're not going to do that. They're going to wean you off it. Now, how are they going to wean you off it? They're going to keep running the prices up to finally you throw up your hands and you go, no mas, put me on the cable or the digital or the fiber optic.
Yeah, the fiber optic. Yeah.
So this, they always did everything they possibly could to screw you, basically, with these lines. Because now you're talking about a phone line that you're on for a while. So if we were to go to, say, Phoenix, we had a deal with Sprint, and it was, you know, penny a minute or 2 cents a minute or something, which is not much of a problem. All of a sudden, we got a station in Oak Brook, and we go to Oak Brook. Well, now AT&T, since that's like a 708 area code, they were charging us like 40 cents a minute until we got the first bill, you know, that kind of crap. And then finally I'm going, wait a minute. How come it's cost to be, you know, a 20th of the amount to go to Phoenix than it does to Oak Brook? Well, you know, you got to get some package. So this is, it's like a big game. They don't tell you how much it is until they send you the bill, then you get outraged with the bill. Well, finally, it gets to the spot where the AT&T guys says, well, we really don't want these lines anymore. And I said, well, like, sell them to somebody. Well, it turns out we're going to Phoenix, I believe. So I've got to deal with Sprint to go from the alley to Phoenix, and we're doing a show for 2 hours, and it's costing me $200 a month for the phone line back and forth to Phoenix. Guess how much AT&T charges me to get from the office to the alley?
Oh, I'm afraid to ask.
It's like 6 and a quarter. Just to run the copper line from the building hook up to the alley, basically. And I said, that's a little rich. Well, yeah, but we got it through the ICC in Illinois. It's now like part of the Illinois code. But that's how much you have to charge for one of these lines in case anybody ever gets in business. Because we don't want to do it anymore. So in order for you to get away from it, instead of saying we sold it to Joe and Joe's picking up the business, they're just going to keep raising the rates until finally. I mean, you don't want, it's like we're gonna want everybody on electric cars, for an example. So every week you go in for gas and it's up a quarter. So finally, when it's $25 a gallon, you say no mas and you go get an electric car. Well, in the meantime, somebody's making like a real lot of money. It's not like it's going to schools in inner cities. It's going to the company.
Right, and that doesn't reflect any type of cost of business. It's just,
no.
It's just that's what it is.
They were able to
that's
run it through.
Charge.
They just say, okay, there's you know 50 people left in Chicago that use these kind of lines, and probably more than that, for, quote, radio. Why don't we go from $100 a month to $600 a month? Next year we'll go to $1,000. We'll see. Finally, they'll stop squealing. Well, I mean, obviously, if you're to score, maybe you hang in there. But they used to. If you were going to be in Lou's Bar and Grill on Western Avenue on a Thursday night to talk about the White Sox, they would run one of these lines into the bar so that they would have the quality there. Well, nobody does that anymore. I mean, it's not that big of a deal. But all that stuff is now over with. But it's done in a way where you always just make the company that has their nose basically up the ass of government richer. Making them richer changes your behavior. Sort of like taxation,
yeah.
Right? And it's...
Yeah. And of course, again, this goes back to something you and I have talked about many times. The more regulated, the more laws that are passed, the more regulations that are passed, the more opportunity there is for corporate government connivance such that you end up with the corporation making a lot of money and using the government as its enforcer. And it creates not only dependency on the part of the corporation, which is not good, it also creates all kinds of conflicts with the so-called people being represented, who in fact have no say in this. This is the kind of regulatory convenience that or convenient relationship that drives me crazy, and it's the thing that you and I mentioned it many times. It's a fascist kind of circumstance.
How do you and let's keep the what they did to the Romanovs off the table? So we're not going to go. Run over there and grab the people and the family and the first cousins and I'll shoot all of them.
You're not ready for the pitchfork and torch approach yet. Right?
No, we're not ready for that. But how we've talked about it for 10 years on the show with various and sundry terrific guests, and everybody identifies sort of the same issues, and yet I honestly don't know. Once that bus starts going, once you get a momentum to it, it doesn't matter who's president. It doesn't matter. There's a momentum to it. What I'm talking about is you end up with usually the regulation is needed, not all the time. And I'll say when I say needed, it's needed because the government has given something to somebody. They've given them, quote, a monopoly. Now I'm going to go back to my railroad roots and say, okay, so you give Lou in chief, and we've been bringing in along because we need a younger guy. You give us the one of the the first railroad out of Chicago was Lou, believe it or not. They used to give it wasn't a permit; it was called something else. The right of way, the first right of way out of Chicago. What they would do is they'd give people a right of way for a railroad, and they'd give them a lot of land on each side of the right of way, and then they could sell the land to build the railroad. I think if my memory serves me correct, what the first one was?
No.
From Chicago to Galena, because Galena had a bunch of silver mines. It was one of the first railroads out of Chicago.
I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah. Anyway, so you get this railroad, and it's given to you. Right now, there aren't any roads, really, at the time, so there's no real, there surely are no trucks. So if you're a corn farmer along the way, and now you say, hey, there's a railroad, I can get my corn to market, this is a pretty cool deal. You walk up to the railroad guy and you say, hey, how much to put my corn on your covered hopper car? They didn't have a covered hopper car in those days, but on your train. I don't know. How much you got? That kind of thing. When you have no other place to go, right? So obviously somewhere in there, the government wakes up and says, wait a minute. We've just given these people a monopoly. We have to make sure that they don't put everybody else out of business because of the monopoly we just gave them. So that's how your regulation flows. And it starts with, I'm going to say, with all the best intentions, for lack of a better term. Well, over a period of time, the railroads never die. The people in office get to know them an awful lot more than they do the farmer, right? Because there's God knows how many random farmers along the line and or any other line. And now all of a sudden, it's even though it's, quote, regulation, one side has tremendously more access than the other line. The other side. And oh, by the way, I mean, this is before like today's, the money they spent and going down to Springfield and getting the rates done, they get deducted and the rest of the people don't that are fighting them. Okay, so you have this issue. And then not only that, you start this revolving door crap where if you're a bigger firm, I mean, PTI is not going to do this. And that's why, you know, the regulators love coming by here and harassing us. But I mean, we're not going to do this. But if we were five times the size and I didn't have a stubborn streak in me from the south side, the first thing I would do is go over to FINRA or NFA and I'd hire one of their idiots. Because that's now you're playing the game. And you give somebody from their group a big salary to sit here and do God knows what. To essentially play, with the FINRA and NFA people. And if you watch, every bank has at least one or two people that they've hired from the Fed just to open the door for the regulators. Just to let them know that you're playing the game right. And,
you see exactly the same thing with DOD. I mean, if you want contracting done properly, if you want somebody who understands the ins and outs of the federal acquisition regulation, you go in and hire former DOD officials or former DOD contracting officers who understand how to work that stuff and how to deal with it.
It's not that they understand anything, Lou. It's that you're playing the game. You're giving back to the group. They can count on you. Somebody from their gang getting a $200,000 a year job instead of $150,000 or $90,000. You're part of the revolving door.
Well, sure. I mean, this is the Hunter Biden influence issue. I mean, Hunter Biden's not put in Burisma or those Chinese corporations for any expertise other than he knows a guy who knows a guy.
Well, right, and you know, it's the funny part is it's very very when you talk about human nature to this amount, it doesn't matter whether you're a communist, it doesn't matter whether you're allegedly free like we are allegedly. When the people were here from China, we had a group that had a they used our offices, and we were a liaison. We had seven people from China here for 3 weeks on a agricultural interchange deal, for lack of a better term. And they, you know, we were having dinner three nights a week with these people. And I got pretty friendly with them. They're very nice. I mean, they were very under the radar employees of the Chinese government, but they weren't. They were 28 years old. They weren't high up in the Communist Party. But if you talk to them, you'd say, well, yeah, if you're going to bring a business over here, there's going to be somebody that you deal with, who's probably the son of somebody who is in the party, and you're going to pay him to make things right for you. He's your, what's the word? He's your Mr. Haney in Green Acres, right? Make sure.
Well, yeah. I mean, in Russia, those guys were called Tolkachi, pushers, shovers,
yeah.
guys who push through things.
And those are guys that's where your millionaires are in China. It's not in the factory workers. That's not happening. But the guys who grease the wheels, right? Because you pay them to make sure you don't have a strike, to make sure you get to pay people all the rice they can eat. I mean, that's what you do. I mean, in Russia, that became the former KGB people, right? That's what they did. Pretty much.
Yeah.
So you end up and we're ending up with that here. I mean, if you want, which is, so in fact, doing business here on some kind of level is really not much different than it is doing business in a communist country. It's getting there.
It is. I mean, especially doing business with the government. And this again goes back to our concerns or issues about regulations. The more regulations there are, the more discretion there is in the prosecutor. I mean, every big law firm there in Chicago has a white-collar crime group that is made up principally of former U.S. attorneys or state's attorneys who, when your client stumbles into, let's say, taking a trip to the Bahamas with some young ladies and suddenly finds himself tagged as a sex trafficker, these lawyers pick the phone up and they call one of their buddies in the U.S. attorney's office or the state's attorney's office and say, hey man, what's happening? What's happening with this case? What can you tell me? What can we do to try to short circuit it? Now again, access that you and I won't have.
Oh yeah, right.
And so every one of these guys. What's the movie with George Clooney where he's the attorney who's a fixer?
Well, I don't
remember the name of it.
I know which one you're talking about. I've seen bits and pieces
with,
of it.
Tilda Swinton, who's the bad guy. I'll think of it. Anyway, I mean, those kinds of guys are everywhere. And not just at the low level of Clooney, where he can fix, you know, DUIs and stuff like that, but at the highest levels, where you can have people who pick up the phone and call the Attorney General of the United States directly and say, "This is my client. You and I used to work together. What can you tell me about what's happening with him? And is there a way to resolve this short of, you know, him being frog marched out of the office in handcuffs?"
Although we're going to have a break, we come back. Another movie that is so far off the radar would never happen again. Remember Absence of Malice?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that'll never
great
happen.
Film.
Wilford Brimley is dead in many ways.
Yes.
It's been more than, yeah. S&P Futures up 13, NASDAQ Futures up 119. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Explained as such is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Lou Michaels is with us. We have Ian Kidwell on the board. Doing a good job, doing a good job. You were, for a guy thrown in after only 2 days of training, Ian, I have to say you've done pretty well this week, even though you conspired with AT&T to screw up the phones the other day. Did you call up over there? You got a buddy over there?
No, I have no contact at AT&T.
So, you know, if you were smart, you'd have them break it, and then you fix it and take credit, you know.
I wish I was that smart.
Yeah, so S&P Futures up 13 and a quarter. NASDAQ Futures up 117. We actually have the Dow is like unchanged, and the Dow we've got really not much doing anything. I've got, let me see. Well, we got Microsoft up 240, CRM up $1.33, but some of the other guys are down. We've got Goldman Sachs down 89 cents, Home Depot down. So the Dow is up a whole two. Over in Asia, we've got, this guy's been pretty slow too. Nikkei down 21, call that flat. Shanghai up 2, call that flat. Hang Seng moving to the upside though, up 333, 1.1, and they were closing an extra day, so they're still doing a little catch up here. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 13.1%, FTSE up 28.4%, CAC around up 27.4%. As a review of yesterday, we had the Dow up 16, S&P up 6, NASDAQ down 9, it was a snoozer yesterday. Bonds, 10 years, 1.64, it's down a basis point. One minus 0.33, Japan positive 0.10. As to how they still get people in Europe to invest at negative rates, I have no idea. I would have thought that would have been long gone, but it is not. Oil down 44 cents, 59.33. Brent down 29 cents, 62.87. Natural gas down 3 cents, 2.48. RBOB down to 195. Well, was there yesterday. It's down to 0.2 of a cent. But gold up 780, 17.49. Silver up 17 cents. 25.42. The Fed came out yesterday and said they maintain their stance. They're going to keep pouring money into the system. Copper up 3 cents, 4.08, back up over $4. And we've got the crypto. We got Bitcoin up 579, 56,456. Ian, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, Cubs and Sox both.
Yeah, Cubs lost to the Brewers 2-4, and the White Sox lost to the Mariners 4-8. So not a good day for Chicago baseball. For traffic, it looks like the roads are clear so far, no accidents. There's a 3:10 game at a White Sox game on the south side, so keep an eye out for that. With weather in Chicago, it's going to be on and off rain today, cloudy, a high of 64. It's surprisingly warm this morning. I thought the temperature was going to drop a little bit more. But in Phoenix, it is, as always, high of 93. Partly cloudy, but still warm and sunny. That's all on the weather.
The Lou, I just got a missive from my club. Now, this is how bizarre things are around here. In the counties, Cook County, if you go to your club, once you make it to your machine, say your bike or whatever the hell you're on, your treadmill, you can then take your mask off because now they're supposed to be 6 feet apart from other people. City, you always had to wear your mask even on the machine, which, if you've ever done it, the idea that the mask doesn't bother you breathing, first of all, it does.
Here in Denver, we have to have our masks on when we're exercising, and I hate it.
Well, now they just decided that even if you're fully vaccinated, you still need the mask because we're still not sure. When did freedom become a negotiation between the people, the city, and Lori's appointee? Who just likes to tell people what to do, and oh, by the way, there's a certain amount of authoritative stuff that these people have, Louis. First, to want their job and be able to tell people what to do. It just, I don't know how you, anyway, just real quick on the absence of malice, and then I want to, ask you a question because, it's being debated. We've talked about it a little bit on the show, but since nobody knows right where the answers are, I'm hoping you do. I hope I'm not jumping one on you. Anyway, the absence of malice was Paul Newman and Sally Field. And I forget who was the district attorney.
Well, the sleazeball. He's a little character actor. He played the lead in Never Cry Wolf. And I can't remember his name.
Well, the upshot of it was is Paul Newman was the son of a very famous mafia guy, right? And he's straight. And the reporter heads to this district attorney guy and says, I don't know if this guy's really straight. Let's like follow him and watch him and prove to you that he's not straight. So they basically get in Paul Newman's underwear and he figures out what's happening.
So they selectively leak to the press.
Yeah, and then he figures out what's going on and sort of plays along with it and sets little traps for him along the way. So it becomes this kind of huge cat and mouse game, which they keep thinking they're getting further. In fact, he's drawing him in to where they're making bigger idiots out of themselves, right? Is that basically the line? Am I wrong with that? I think it's probably the...
He sets him up with one major trap where he makes just a large donation to a political entity and the assumption is he's doing it for payoff purposes, some kind of nefarious purpose. And the U.S. attorney, you know, jumps on that, publicizes that. The reporter who Newman is sleeping with, ends up, you know, running the story, and then the senior U.S. attorney, Wilford Brimley, shows up and gives a couple of the greatest speeches you'll ever hear in film, and that includes My Cousin Vinny, which is my favorite lawyer movie.
Oh yeah.
But he comes in and he says, "We're going to figure out what the heck's going on here." And he sits everybody around the table and says, "Look, you're all going to talk to me. If you don't want to talk to me, I got a grand jury convened just down the hall, and you know the marshal, U.S. Marshal here. But this is all done in a very folksy, homey way.
Oh yeah,
he's
yeah.
calling everybody. He's calling all these U.S. Marshal and the other attorneys. He's calling them all by their first name because he knows them all." And down to the court reporter who's taken the testimony, and he just says, I got a grand jury convened down the hall, and Mr. U.S. Marshal so and so here is going to hand you a subpoena, and you're going to go down and talk to the grand jury, and then he says something to the effect of, at the end of the day, two things are going to happen. We're going to figure out what actually is going on here and what has happened with this so called case, and I'm going to have somebody's ass in my briefcase.
Right, and what it leads people to believe, and I'm getting to the point now, Lou, that it's an absolute false hope, that if you just work your way up the channel, at either a corporation or the government or someplace, you will find a mini Solomon that has, what are the Yiddish people call him, a mensch. You'll find somebody that has some intelligence and some morals that if you just get to them, they will straighten things out. And I tell you what, that person is not there anymore. I don't
believe that's the case at the Department of Justice. I haven't since, I mean, Barr maybe, but I haven't since the whole coup attempt against Trump came into full exposure with all the back dealing and the FISA fraudulent filings and the attempt to entrap a sitting president of the United States by the law enforcement agencies he's in charge of. I have very little faith in even the senior echelon leadership of the FBI and DOJ.
I haven't had for a real long period of time, Lou. I mean, I had no trust for Eric Holder. Who was the guy that Bush had that lost the election to the dead guy in Missouri? Then he became the attorney general. I didn't like.
I know you're talking about.
He lost to the dead guy's wife, right, or something?
Yeah. I can't remember his name. Ashcroft.
Yeah, but we haven't exactly had an Oliver Wendell Holmes in that job in a while. Just saying.
No, and so let me throw this out to you. So this now I'm going to segue into something I was going to leave alone.
Can you do this for me first?
Sure.
If you can. If you can't, we'll do it next week. You read about this filibuster rule all the time, and yet I know there's been some changes. Can you, without wrecking the stuff that you want to say in terms of time, is there a way to do a 2-minute summary of where the rule now stands, or should we put it off for next week?
Let's put it off for next week because I'd want to do some research. I mean, the short answer is non-budgetary bills, because they've now invoked this budget reconciliation language in the Senate, but non-budgetary bills can be filibustered, and as an act of grace, the Senate leadership says, okay, if you say you're going to filibuster it, we're not going to make you stand up on the floor of the Senate until you can't talk anymore to hold off on legislation. So 60 votes is typically required now to pass non-budget related legislation.
Is every budget related stuff considered reconciliation, even if it's a new bill?
That's kind of a magic wand that got waved. It first got used, if I remember right, when Obamacare was coming in. They used the budget reconciliation rule to pass Obamacare. I thought it was a mistake. It opened the floodgates wide for consideration of all kinds of things that I thought should be subject to filibuster. But I'd like to do a little more research on that before I.
Well, a couple.
Before I start,
a couple real quick stupid questions. I know there actually is There's got to be rules that if you or I, of course we're not senators, if we wanted to filibuster, there actually is a you can hold on to the platform, you can't sit, you can go to the bathroom what once an hour or two.
It used to be that way. It's not that way anymore.
Well, my question is, can you if I get done talking and you feel the same way I do, can I make sure that you're called on next so you can continue, or how does it?
Yeah, I think they can. I think the old rule was you could hold the floor, your party could hold the floor, or people speaking on the bill could hold the floor for as long as they could speak.
So you could tag team it. You didn't have to do it yourself for 48 hours.
I believe that's correct, but I don't I don't know the exact specifics. But that rule is no longer in effect.
It's another one of these things where you'll be somewhere at a coffee shop, saloon, lounge, so we say, and everybody's got an opinion on it, and nobody has any idea what it is, you know. You don't need to...
Yeah. Well, it's arcane, and... excuse me. It used to be that there was a filibuster rule in place for judicial nominees, and that idiot Harry Reid waived that back when he was in control of the Senate, prompting McConnell to say, you're going to rue the day you did this. And, of course, you know, Republicans got control of the Senate next time around, and I assume Democrats rued the day Harry Reid did this. But
well, whenever you have a serious leader of the country coming from a town in Nevada with one stoplight, you got to take the bad with the good, shall we say.
Well, I mean, obviously, Reid was, and I can't go into too much detail, but Reid was one of the, you know, really, I think, truly awful people that was in the Senate, and I'm not just because he was a Democrat, but because of the way he conducted business there, the way he conducted himself.
Just 30 seconds. How insidious has the money thing been there? How it become where, you know, pick a site. McConnell's wife was on the board of Wells Fargo, wasn't it? It was Wells Fargo, and now she's she was an interior, she's interior transportation, she was something.
I think she was both.
Which we had Wendy Graham made a fortune at Enron, and she was in charge of like governance at Enron. I mean, for God's sake, Lou. And then we've got Nancy Pelosi's husband, who's you know, all you see is his behind because his nose is in the government. I mean, how do you
that refrigerator is filled with $50 a pint ice cream, let me tell you.
Yeah, I mean, how do you break that? I mean, it's not quote illegal, but it's sure as hell not reasonable to send people there. I mean, how do you?
Well, the way you break it is you put in, and the thing is, nobody in power wants this.
Well, no.
The way you break it is you put in place conflict of interest rules with teeth. And if the appearance, look, conflict of interest rules are aimed at the appearance of impropriety, and they don't apply to Congress though. So you put in conflict of interest rules with teeth.
But I mean the population, Lou. And again, I promise I'm only a minute on this, then we'll get into what you want to talk about because I owe you that. But we had Easter dinner at my brother's, and of course he does his usual terrific job, and his family's there, and my niece and nephew are in a car crash Friday night, so they're there and with all their fingers and toes. So of course it was a happy occasion. They got pinned by a truck between them and the barrier by the L tracks because somebody came flying in, caused the truck to move over, and they got pinned between the truck and the car's totally destroyed. Every window's busted, but they're okay. I mean, I obviously very thankful for that.
It's a scary accident. I've actually had that happen.
And but we're having a debate between my significant other and my brother's wife, and they're talking about whether or not a mayor of like Orland should be part time or full time, and of course they're all over it saying it's not really a 40-hour a week job because we just had elections here in Illinois, and you know that in Illinois there are more municipalities or villages or whatever you want to call them than any other state in the union by far.
Yeah, there are more regulatory districts than anywhere else.
It's insane. Now, I tried to explain. I mean, you know, trying to explain to everybody, it has nothing to do with how many hours you put on the job. It has to do with can you have outside income, like be an attorney representing people against your village and stuff, which is how Eddie Verdoliak made all his money, and that's what who's the latest alderman to get in trouble, Eddie Burke,
the guy who's retiring, who ran the state for years,
but
he was up to his eyeballs in conflicted work.
Yeah, what I'm saying, but Illinois is designed that all these things are part time jobs. I mean, the guy who's the head of the Board of Tax Appeals, that's a part time job. You ask him what he does for a living, he'll tell you he's a lobbyist. I mean, it's insane. So, but I couldn't win this argument, Lou. When the ladies were like, no, it's not a 40-hour week job. It should be considered part time. I said, do you want the guy doing other stuff other than this? Maybe even totally conflicting. It's not. But no matter how you, it depends on how you look at it. In their mind, it's this should be a part time job because you don't work, you know, like a welder 40 hours a week. And I don't know if you can't even make it determine your over Easter dinner, which is the right way to go. How the hell? No wonder these guys go year after year after year and ladies without anybody coming after them because nobody can form a consensus, Lou.
Well, that goes to what I've long considered the huge problem in Illinois, which is the culture of corruption that permeates, because it's everywhere. It permeates every level of life in Illinois.
Yeah.
And the latest example was that Little League scandal with that team that was illegal that you know, cobbled together. And nobody thought there was anything wrong with that until some other coach finally figured out what was going on and blew the whistle on him.
The coach that blew the whistle was the ball field right behind the house I grew up in.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he suddenly becomes the bad guy after they strip the title from accomplishments from that illegally
But you know why, Lou? It was a team put together in bad neighborhoods, and they took the kids off the streets and did something for them. They're all African American, and you know, it was a positive event for those kids for the summer because they weren't running around because the guy got them out of the neighborhood, off playing baseball, and then they happened to win. And then all of a sudden now there's a problem with it. Therein lies the rub. There's never a small piece of the story. Were they illegal?
Well, I'm sorry. That,
yeah.
We got a great story. I could put together all kinds of great stories if you don't require me to follow the rules. And, you know, maybe they should have handled it some other way.
I didn't say I agreed, but if they'd made it to the fourth game and lost, you'd say it was a good deal. But the fact that they won, they cheated, right?
Well, I mean, that's what rules are there for.
I agree.
And
all right, so what are you?
I don't
had something to talk about. Let's go your way.
Yeah. So I wanted to just follow on from your comment about people, you know, going into these jobs like attorney general or whatever, and not being measured for competence. So the segue for that is what's happening in Minneapolis with the Derek Chauvin trial, and I don't know if Chicago is really interested in the Chauvin trial, because in terms of police misconduct, what happened to Floyd, you know, as awful as it was, you know, the guy died, in terms of police misconduct is relatively minor to the average day in Chicago, with the worst police case in Chicago, which I still say is Laquan McDonald.
Oh yeah.
The Attorney General of Minnesota,
by the way, did you read
Keith Ellison, who was actually, amazingly enough, an Antifa supporter, but he got elected. He's African American. He got elected, you know, on this, you know, Black Lives Matter push. You know, I'm going to deal with, you know, civil rights and get all this done. So now he's got a case, and he has personally excuse me, inserted himself into this Chauvin trial. So he's taken on "quote unquote" oversight responsibility for this case. Now he's not arguing anything, but his attorneys are, and presumably under his supervision. And so, I mean, if you listen to just CNN or one of the other major news networks, you're not getting an accurate picture of what is happening in that courtroom. But I've been watching the video direct and cross of these witnesses, and in terms of actually proving that this guy was negligent or intended to kill Floyd or any of the other things that they have to show, that he was in gross disregard of Floyd's condition in life, the defense has been just flipping expert witness after expert witness. In fact, it was so bad yesterday that the defense or the prosecution expert witness on use of force actually testified that Floyd's or Chauvin's knee in the back move was probably reasonable under given the circumstances, and that, you know, there were a whole bunch of factors that the cop had to consider before releasing this guy to EMT. And it's really interesting to see this. Very little of this is getting reported, but you know, as I listen to this with my wife, who is also an attorney, we're listening to these guys, these witnesses being questioned, and we're going, this is a disaster, at least in terms of the elements of the case that the prosecution has to prove. Now, I think the prosecution is saying, you know what, we got this videotape, we really don't have to worry very much. That's always a mistake, but to the extent that Ellison was elected to deal with precisely this kind of issue, when the rubber finally meets the road, you know, they don't get a guilty plea. They get a guy who's actually going to fight because they overcharged the case. He was apparently ready to accept a manslaughter guilty plea a year ago, and they said the Ellison said no, this guy's got to plead to murder. And under state law, I think that was a terrible mistake. It hardened the resistance of Chauvin and his defense team. It's created all kinds of problems for them now. And now, as you get into the mechanics of trial, and this is everybody who's ever tried a case will tell you, it's like Mike Tyson. Everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth. Every trial team has its plan as to how the case is going to go, but you never really know until you put the witnesses on the stand and you start listening to them. And this is what's happening with
Lou,
with
when you,
the Chauvin trial.
When you talk about, and I've just seen bits and pieces of it, when you talk about first degree, now obviously that's murder with intent, correct?
It's typically premeditated.
Okay, so is there some sort of a time frame? If I go over to Ian's place, of course he lives in the same building as me, so it wouldn't be too far of a drive. If I go down the stairs with the intention of plugging him, obviously that's,
oh my god,
but I mean, I guess is there a time thing? If I head downstairs and all of a sudden he's winging knives at me, and I happen to have a gun, which I don't, and I blast him, obviously I didn't walk down the steps. Of course, then again, why would I walk down to do the laundry with a gun? I'm saying, is there some kind of a time? I mean, are they accusing?
You can in most jurisdictions. Now it varies from state to state, but in most jurisdictions, you can form the intent to kill in a premeditated case. Now, not in response to an instantaneous event, typically, but you could form the intent to kill in a matter of seconds.
Okay. But, I mean, there is some sort of, there's a common sense, and I was watching a little bit of Chicago Fire last night, and I don't know why the hell I was doing it, but I watched some of that, and they had a bunch of recruits, and they had some kid who was the son of a big-time supervisor in the system. And if he, of course, is dying for his kid to be a firefighter, and the guy who's doing the training is like, the kid just lacks whatever common sense you need. Like, he's running down the steps with a body, and he keeps telling him, you're going too fast, going too fast, and the guy bangs into the rail, and the fake body, you know, falls from the fifth floor, clunk on the ground. He says he just doesn't have the common sense it takes to know when he's going too fast, or know this, or to think twice before he does something. And I don't know. I think a lot of. Let's put it this way: I was very strong on police. My dad was a policeman. My uncle was a policeman. But I also know that, and because I know a lot of people, that virtually every policeman can name a guy that doesn't belong on a force. Maybe it's 1 out of 100. Maybe it's 1 out of 90. I don't know. But it's. I mean, everybody knows. Everybody knows. I mean, I'm sure you can name people that have no business being a lawyer, Lou. And I can name people that have no business being on a trader on the trading floor. But it's 1 out of 1,000, which everybody can name one. Now, the question is what the guy did, and this guy's a big guy, and he's on something. Even though he's handcuffed, you might have had to do, like, something to calm the guy down. But there's a certain amount of common sense that, you know, even back in the days when you didn't shoot people and you had a billy club, if you really had to whack somebody, you knew enough that once was enough, not two or three or four or ten times. I mean, there's a common sense to it, even though you're doing something that is violent by nature. You know.
That got addressed yesterday with their use of force expert, and they very carefully, the defense brought cross, very carefully led this guy to admit that A, there were plenty of circumstances where a defendant is either faking on the ground or has lost consciousness, but when restraint is removed, regains consciousness and becomes even more dangerous. Plenty of situations where it would the smart thing to do to protect the suspect from injuring himself, or especially with this excited delirium condition that they felt was in play, or the EMT crews, is to maintain control of them until the EMT people get there. And in fact, this witness and the Minneapolis trainer witness, because the expert witness was from L.A., the Minneapolis trainer witness both said that they had physically restrained suspects on the ground until the EMT people got there, all the way until the EMT people got there. They also elicited from this guy, this expert, and from the Minneapolis training expert, that the first obligation is to try to control the situation so you don't get into a riot with a bunch of these people. And faced with a crowd that was getting more and more unruly and more threatening by the second, the officer's attention on the crowd versus the suspect who he's got now restrained is appropriate.
Well, Lou, I'm concerned. I mean, as I watch this stuff, and I remember, I don't remember my dad, he died when I was four. My mom used to tell me stories about, you know, police work, and he didn't talk about it all that much, but she would say the idea of having your gun out wandering around pointing it at people says you shouldn't pull it unless you're going to shoot it. But the thing that surprises me is if you'll see the city of Chicago, and Evergreen Park, you know, it was a different spot, but it, you know, it's right next to Chicago. But they would, if they had a, say they pulled a car over at, you know, 1 in the morning and it's going 50 miles an hour down 95th Street, and you can't see in any of the windows, and you just got this feeling that, you know, there's a problem with maybe. The guy would, he would wait, and all of a sudden you'd see another squad car or two come by, and they'd stop, and it turned, you know, it could be somebody's mom in there, who the hell knows, but you don't know at that point. I mean, the last thing you want is a single cop walking up with the gun drawn, telling the guy to open the window, and he reaches for his Coke from Burger King, and you think he's reaching for a gun, and you shoot him, and you got a problem. I mean, but the surprising me, Lou, is that you see the Laquan McDonald, you see all these, there's people there, these guys are not alone. They're acting as if they're alone when they have other policemen right there. There's no teamwork. I mean, the McDonald kid, if you'd have been alone by yourself and you didn't know if he had a gun and he's wandering around in front of you like that, I still don't think it was justifiable. But he had, what, 8 other guys there? 7? I mean, there's no teamwork whatsoever. This guy wasn't alone in Minnesota, was he? He had the guy.
No, in fact, he was called to the scene because the cops that were there making the initial arrest could not control Floyd. Floyd was overpowering both of them.
The big man.
He was refusing to get into the car. He was, basically resisting arrest to the maximum amount he could. So this officer, Chauvin, and again, I'm giving you the defense version, but I will tell you, it's backed up by admissions from these prosecution experts. Chauvin arrives at the scene, and the first thing he does is get Chauvin under control. And he thinks Chauvin has a condition called excited delirium, which could be fatal. He hears that he may have ingested drugs. So he puts him on his stomach with the knee between I don't think the knee was on the neck. I never did. Knee between the shoulder blades or up high on the back, whatever. I mean, again, they had two experts look at the pictures and say, well, yeah, that looks like his knee's between his shoulder blades. Puts him on the ground and holds him there until the EMTs get there. And at some point in that process, Floyd expires.
Yeah.
Now, the issue is whether the cop somehow caused the guy's death. But what I'm hearing from the experts and their admissions on cross-examination, and of course you never know how this plays with a jury, But the admissions on cross-examination are that, never mind the fact that Floyd died, the steps taken by the police officer were reasonable given the circumstances, given the angry crowd, given the threats, given the fact that Floyd had been fighting all the way until Chauvin got control of him and put him on the ground, the whole bit. So, you know, this idiotic situation where a guy simply says, I'm not going to do what you want to do. It doesn't matter what the underlying offense was. This was a minor offense. The guy saying, I'm not going to do what you want me to do, escalates everything.
Oh, yeah. All right, Lou, we got a dash, buddy. Thank you very much. SB fuse up 14. SB fuse up 111. We're going to try and put the whip to it today. We were slow yesterday. Lou, take care of yourself. Have a nice weekend. Be right back.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Dan Janitas.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, Audrey Johnson, at Realtor.com. That's Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com.
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
My eyes beheld an eerie sight, for my monster from his lab began.
Is there some connection between that song and Mr. Dan Janitas? Obviously, we must have just lost. SP Futures up 14, SA Futures up 114. We had the Dow only up 3, so we're having that kind of a market again today. We're sort of mixed and sort of all over the place. Should have Mr. Dan here in a second. We've got an article here that I dug up by a gentleman, Investment Watch. I don't know who the hell these guys are, but basically pulls up that if you look at the inflation numbers, how spotty it is, and it's and how uneven the inflation lands. Hopefully, I have Dan. He can tell me I'm all wrong on this in a second, but maybe I'm not. We have Dan. How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing all right. We're fighting the phones a little bit, but other than that, we're fine. I was just saying I was hoping you'd be here because I got some article here, and I don't know who wrote the damn thing, but I guess it doesn't matter. But it's sort of an example, not that I needed one, about my concern that as inflation goes forward, and I think you've been sort of agreeing on how uneven it is, and This has to do with housing prices. And this is the wildest home buying binge in U.S. history has pushed home prices to hyperinflationary levels. And so what they're saying is that they, well, I don't know where this guy is, but maybe he might be where you are. He said, not even in the days before the housing bubble in 2008 did we see anything like this. As I've discussed in previous articles, in some cases, more than 100 offers are coming in for a single home. It's actually an understatement to call we're watching a frenzy, is because there's no signs it'll cool down anytime soon. And it's the primary reason why home prices are soaring into the stratosphere. Now, clearly, in cities like Chicago, you have people abandoning some areas and trying to pile into other areas. So there's some of that going on. It's not just inflation. He says, but the giant mountains of money that our leaders have pumped into the system over the past 12 months. It took from the founding of the United States all the way to early 2020 for M1. Now, I don't really watch M1 very much. And M1 is cash in circulation and demand deposits, correct? And something or other is another thing in there, repos or something. But it's basically stuff you can get at easily. So a demand, if you have a checking account, that's M1. If you have a savings account, it's not. It's M2. But from early 2020 to today, M1 has gone from $4 trillion to $18 trillion in the last year. He says, what our leaders have done is nothing short of economic malpractice and has pushed home prices to hyperinflationary levels. Now, whether that's, says home prices are high. In a recent report from Redfin underlines that point, median home sale prices increased 17% year over year to $335,613, a record high per data taken from more than 400 metro areas during the 4-week period ending March 28th. The asking prices of newly listed homes rose 14% year over year to $353. So in other words, the prices, the prices that people are paying are actually over the asking price. It's like we've been talking about, Dan. It's not even. My concern there is back in 2007. Of course, I had the discussion with the significant other, and you know how those go, regarding that. That the home prices at that time, before that fiasco, like 85% of the people in the country couldn't afford the average home or the median home. And now I got to believe we're at least there again. Do you think so or not?
Yeah, I do. We have a little bit of static here that I can hear on my end, but I think I get your I get the drift of where you're coming from, and yes. I think we're there. I do think, as one point that you made, is that there's a lot of cash on the sideline. There's been a lot of savings during this period. You know, just think about the typical professional person who's working from home, who hasn't had the same costs for travel. The expenses. People aren't eating out as much. You know, people have naturally been saving during this period. There hasn't necessarily been pay cuts. So there's not, for people who are, higher paid, skilled laborers, construction workers, electricians, plumbers, as well as people who are in even our profession, for example, we're not necessarily seeing a reason to be tightening right now in terms of our budgets. We're actually seeing probably more cash and savings, and probably saving in a number of areas, whether it be something as simple as gas or clothing or travel or not eating out as much. A lot of the things that naturally you tell people to keep an eye on your when you're doing your own budget. So it's not surprising that we've seen this increase in this continued increase in housing. The other thing that we've seen during this period is a limited inventory. So regardless of where you live, it's a supply and demand situation, and it's not like everyone is just trying to sell their houses. And now we had a little bit of that happening in the big cities, especially in New York, where people were fleeing to the suburbs and to Florida to find more space. But as we get through the pandemic, that's going to change, and I believe a lot of people are going to be moving back into the city. They're going to miss the energy, and so. Overall, pretty much across the board in the country, I think we're seeing higher prices. We're seeing a lot of demand. We're seeing a lot of people use this as an excuse to move, and they're wanting to move to places where that are more affordable. That might be their ideal place to live that they were hoping to move to in a you know, a few years down the road, but now they're thinking, hey, I can work from home. So I think there's a lot of factors that are going to play into this continued increase in home prices, this continued escalation or inflation in home prices. They do get to a point where they're not affordable, and that happened even before the pandemic. That was where your 30-something, you know, early 30-something couple, and I can think of one in particular who were having trouble, you know, to each of them having a six-figure income and yet having trouble finding a decent apartment, a condo, or house in, you know, in the suburban, even in suburban Atlanta, where prices are a lot lower. So when things get to that point, there, you know, prior to that point, and if you go back, like you said, the 06, 07 period, I can go back even further to the late 80s when we went through the same thing, where it seemed like there was a bubble and things were becoming less affordable. And when that happens, it's generally followed by a period of correction and a period of slower growth. And it, so there's no question the housing market is heating up. It was heating up before the pandemic. It's still heating up. I'm not sure we're going to find a lot of bargains in this environment if you're out there looking. I don't think it's the environment for people who are wanting to flip homes, but I think for people who are selling homes in higher priced areas and moving to lower priced areas, it works. And I think there's probably going to be more cash transactions than mortgages, but mortgage rates are still low. So it's really not a surprise in the environment that we're in. Will there be pressure if the 10-year continues to rise? Well, certainly this week the 10-year took a little bit of a breather. There's a little less volatility in the market this week, I think, after the good jobs report. And also after some of the positive news that we had from, say, the airlines and the cruise ships being able to figure out a way to travel again, you know, people getting vaccinated, you know, sort of they're opening their doors a little more. And I think this is going to happen relatively quickly, and I think it's going to continue to benefit the economy. It's going to continue to benefit areas, anything related to travel, hotels, restaurants, anything that sort of supports the hospitality industry. I think those areas are going to come back, maybe not quite as much, but it's going to give individuals more confidence in this sort of economic rebound, which will fuel what you were talking about earlier. Hey, you know, this is everything sort of going back to normal. Now we'd like to, you know, maybe we'll take the trip or maybe we will buy that second home. But they're going to have to pay a little more for either. So it is a good argument for seeing inflation and seeing more inflation. I don't think, again, as I said before, it's going to happen today or tomorrow. I think it's going to happen over a period of time. And some of it's going to happen also, some of it is going to happen sort of at the same time as we might see higher taxes. So there could be a sort of, I don't want to call it a perfect storm, but there could be like a period of time when, you know, where taxes are having a negative impact, as well as the I don't want to call it unaffordability or lack of affordability in certain areas like housing and possibly even travel if it gets to that point. So I think the question then is, where do you put your money? You know, where do you put your money if you're looking on the fixed side of things? And I'm going to repeat something that I've said before, because these areas have done quite well, and I still think there's room for growth. And these are in the preferred stocks. Again, we talked about Chicken Soup for the Soul, 9.2% dividend yield. Only good news coming out there. But more importantly, a company like Blue Knight, who has the preferred that's yielding 9% right now, that stock has run up. However, we think it has more room to grow. Asphalt, that's the asphalt storage business. A couple of new names that I had maybe briefly mentioned. Still pay dividends, not quite as high as the preferreds, but Aztec is another company, ticker symbol ASTE. Aztec also does asphalt and other aggregates. They provide the equipment for road construction and for infrastructure building in general. That stock has not rallied with the other infrastructure stocks in the past week, so it might be a good one to take a look at. And then another stock that will do well with this infrastructure play that has kind of held back this past week as well is Federal Signal. Federal Signal, ticker symbol FSS, Chicago-based company. They're in Oak Brook. Long history. I like these Midwest companies that have a long history. The organization was founded in 1901 to focus more on the signal part of the business, which would be like sirens for police cars and all that. But their other business, which is growing, is their specialty vehicles. And the specialty vehicles are the ones that are used in street cleaning, sewer cleaning, road building, any type of, you know, construction that are not your typical dump trucks, but they'd be the ones that would be used for specific tasks in the infrastructure build out. So solid companies. Those two are very solid companies. They're ironically their beta in both cases is one. So if they track the market, they're not going to be like some of the other names that I've mentioned that have a lot more volatility. These names are going to kind of be steady eddies that I believe will do well in this infrastructure environment, because regardless of what the outcome is, and if there is sort of some back and forth on the details of the infrastructure, the one area that I think that is going to get passed and is going to get, we're going to move forward on, is going to be the actual construction of roads, build out of roads, build out of infrastructure. And then sort of one final area that another name that we've mentioned before, MasTec, they do a lot of the infrastructure for cell towers. Their stock has basically doubled since we started talking about it. They will continue to do well in this environment because there's going to be a need for a build-out in cell and in technology and telecommunications. And these guys will be at the forefront of being able to benefit from that build-out. So those are areas that are probably going to be less controversial with this infrastructure bill, since they're truly doing what infrastructure should be doing, you know, growing infrastructure, repairing, and these companies are ones that are known for building out roads, building out cell towers and areas that are where we truly need the work to be done. And I don't think we're going to have a whole lot of resistance from either, you know, I don't think this is going to be a bipartisan issue. Some of the other parts of the infrastructure bill may not play themselves out, but these are stocks that will do well. They pay dividends, and again, I'm referring to these as potential alternatives to low-yielding fixed income. There is still the chase on for yield, and it's very hard to find yield anywhere. We're not, despite, you know, the tick up that we have had this year in the 10-year, doesn't mean that there's all these opportunities now. It means, if anything, to kind of sit back and wait to see what happens on the 10-year, because you don't want to get whipsawed by interest rate risk. But in general, I would say that inflation is definitely something where, you know, where we have to keep the inflation picture in mind. It's something that could potentially cause rates to continue to go higher, which won't be good for long purchases of Treasury bonds.
Well, it's not going to be good for anything that you buy long, and you wonder if you want to get involved in a long-term, you know, contract for things. I mean, you talk about, you know, this word infrastructure, which everybody uses. I mean, you just use it a whole bunch of times, and so do I. So it's not like that's an indictment or anything, but it is so interestingly defined. As I think that, well, again, Dan, I'm jaundiced. Honestly, the word jaundiced by being in the city I'm in, and when I look out the window, I can damn near see the Burn Interchange, which is going to be a 12-year, you know, more project. It's going to cost more than like all the expressways to build combined. I mean, I from the South Side, I'm a railroad kind of guy. I see the Inglewood Flyer that took 15, 20 years to build. Finally, they build it, and now that it's done, they don't need it because the people found so many other routes to go around the city that you don't see a freight train even go through there, or very, very seldom, certainly in relation to what was before. I don't trust these people for a second to build another Hoover Dam, to build a TVA, to build a Golden Gate Bridge. They're going to piss this money away, give it to their friends, and at the end of 10 years, we're going to wonder where the hell it went. And all we're going to have is this massive tax bill. I mean, honestly, my confidence in these whatever side of the aisle they're on, when you say it's going to be bipartisan, to me that means they're going to grease both sides people. Now, what are we doing? Are we going to, without even knowing whether anybody wants to live in a city again, are we going to spend a fortune on New York subways, not even knowing anybody wants to live in New York? I mean, what are we going to do? There seems to be, I was listening to some yogiisms the other night. If you don't know where you're going, how do you know when you got there? You know, type of thing. I mean, what are we doing? There doesn't seem to be any, other than pissing more money out there, no matter where it goes. Okay. The only thing I see really here, with various names to it, is some concept of helicopter money. And the idea, one of the listeners sent me a thing yesterday regarding them taking the weekly money supply. They want to, if Milton Friedman wasn't already dead, they'd want to kill him. They don't want anybody looking at that. They don't want any, Powell claims there's like no correlation between money supply and inflation. And that's like me saying there's no correlation between how many shots you drank last night and how you, and your breathalyzer test an hour later. Yeah, there is. I mean, come on. I mean, are we supposed to take a collective lobotomy? I mean, what are we doing here? Do you trust these guys to come up with, you know, 2 million public works projects that are going to, at the end of the day, we're all going to be better off? Or just a few people?
Yeah, I know. I know what you're saying. I would say probably there's going to be a mixed bag across the board. I think there's going to be some that are going to be handled very well, and I think it may end up being, you know, the areas that need, you know, like we're saying, like, you know, updating some of the cell towers, updating, you know, to 5G and kind of getting the infrastructure. I think it's going to be a question of getting the right people to do the work and not having sort of, you know, each individual municipality, if you will, or each individual, the people that make the decisions not having any political agenda, and that's pretty hard to avoid. So everyone's going to be fighting for their own constituency and their, you know, the dollars to put into projects that, like as you're saying, that may not, people may not agree with. And I think that's a, you know, a function of I think that's been an issue over time. I know that when they were doing the major renovation in Boston, with the airport, adding the tunnel and all that, and talking about how many years it would take before they would be able to submerge the expressway underground, and that was a project that went on for years and years. And I was saying, just as you're saying, this is going to be a mess here for a long time. There's going to be a lot of, it's going to create a lot of chaos. And even once it's done, by the time we get to that point, there's going to be more traffic. And is it really going to help the situation? And you know, there were sort of arguments pro and against, you know, and I could see, you know, in the end, I don't live in Boston any longer, but I still see that there are issues now that it's been completed. There were a lot of issues along the way. It did provide for a smoother flow of traffic, I guess, up to a certain point of time. But you're right, these projects get outdated very quickly. And I think the projects that I would hope more energy would be spent on would be like old bridges that really need, you know, to be rebuilt, and roads that are coming into new developments and new, you know, sort of expansion and not just improvement, but like new construction, new development. And I think that's where that new construction, new development is sort of where you're going to get most bang for your buck, because you're going to have continued growth. You're going to have, you know, new growth of highways and roads. It's going to bring housing, and it's going to bring, a certain amount of retail back, even if it's just grocery stores and gas stations. But I think there's definitely, I understand what you're talking about, there. I don't think it's one extreme or the other. I think we're someplace in between. I think there are some projects that are well spent. The money's well spent. I do think the expansion of 5G is money well spent. I do think the expansion of, the repairs on some of these bridges that have collapsed is money well spent. So who makes those decisions and how those decisions are made and carried out?
But, I mean, are we going to,
an issue.
Are we going to throw the money? I have a question for you here. Are we going to throw the money at the city of Chicago to replace a bridge that they have not maintained for 40 years so they cannot maintain the new one? But I have a, you know, just in terms of what you and I are always, you know, barking back and forth on is, are we gaining on it, or are we shoving money around? I mean, You're absolutely correct regarding the savings per family. It, right now, today, savings per family is $33,000, which is way higher than it's been in a while. So if you cut that down to person, okay, that's what, $10,000, right? But your debt, your federal debt per person is $85,000. All right. So we're talking 10 and 85, right? So if you drop back to 2008, the savings per person, was probably $1,000. Okay. Cause it was, we weren't doing so high in 2008, right. But the debt per citizen is 32. So we're up $9,000 in savings and we're up $50,000 in debt. Are we on foot or horseback here? I mean, all we're doing is shifting one to the other.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. I think there has to be some reshuffling, if you will. I mean, one of the things that I started out by saying, you know, is just we had positive jobs data. We want to make sure that the jobs that are being created from, say, from infrastructure projects or from other sense of normalcy and say the travel industry and all that. But we want to make sure that those jobs are, you know, that the jobs are created, that maybe the pay is a little bit higher, but not necessarily, you know, that get more people off of unemployment and get people back into some of these
God,
jobs.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There is demand. There is demand right now for skilled and unskilled labor. And I think as we assimilate over the next 6 months, that's going to become more obvious, and it's going to be a challenge, I think, to try to get this, you know, to try to get all the people, you know, everybody back. But I would not pay attention to those numbers, and I would get less concerned about the ability of people to make ends meet, if you will.
I would agree. Dan, thank you very much, buddy. Have a nice weekend. We'll talk at you next week. SP Futures up 14, NASDAQ Futures up 120. Be right back, Mr. Frank Fahey.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. He's Mr. Ian I.K. on the board. I.K. Has anybody ever called you I.K.?
I.K.? No, I've never. I've been called a lot of names, but not I.K.
Did you ever have a nickname that stuck for like 20 years?
Sometimes I was called Big E, which didn't make a whole
Big
lot of
E.
sense to me.
Where did E come from?
Yeah, I don't know. Don't ask me.
Oh, God. SP Futures up 12. NASDAQ Futures up 112. In our day, Ian, everybody had kind of the same names. There were only about eight names people had, which is sort of weird. So when you had a class...
Was Ian one of them?
No. Ian was out. First person I made name... Ian was a hockey player from Toronto in Notre Dame. He was the first Ian I knew.
Oh, interesting. That's
very
pretty cool.
Very nice guy. Very nice guy. Good bridge player, good golfer, great hockey player. All-American hockey player. Anyway, he and I were good buddies. Dow's down a point. But everybody, because there were like six Toms in the room, everybody had a nickname.
And so it's I see.
Because you yell out Tom, like five people were all kinds of Petes. You know, how many Marys there were when the women was, no, I don't think anybody names their kid Mary at all, but anyway, the world has changed. Nikkei down 21, call that flat. Shanghai up 2, call that flat. Hang Seng up 333. Now again, they were closed Monday and Tuesday, but at least Monday. They're up 1%. Europe, we got the DAX up 8. That's pretty flat. FTSE up 32.5%. CAC round up 27.5%. As a way of, yesterday was a snoozer. Dow up 16. S&P up 6. NASDAQ down 9. So kind of a mixed, inside day, as they used to say on the floor. 10-year yield, 1.65. The Bund minus 0.33. Japan positive 0.10. So not much change there. Oil down 15 cents, 59.62. Can't quite make it to 60 bucks this week. Brent up a penny, 63.17. Natural gas down 2 cents, 249. RBOB unchanged at 196. We got gold up 760, trying to make it through 1750, but not there yet. 1749.20. Silver up 18 cents, 25.43. Copper up 3 cents, trying to distance itself from $4 at 409. And we've got the crypto. Bitcoin's up 1200 to 57,060. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, and both our teams sucked.
Yes, they did. But first with the traffic, keep a lookout for a 3:10 White Sox game. Right now there's a bit of congestion due to some police activity on the Eisenhower. It looks like the traffic is outbound, though. Weather in Chicago, it's going to be a little cooler than yesterday. On and off rain with a high of 64. You can expect clouds all day. In Phoenix, it will be, as always, sunny. A spot of clouds at a high of 93. As you said, yeah, Tom, Cubs lost to the Brewers 2-4, and the White Sox lost to the Mariners 4-8. So it is not a good day to be a Chicago baseball fan.
Well, the Cubs can't hit, and the Sox can't catch. You know, so it's
there you go.
Sox are a pretty premier team, though, but still the Cubs, I turned them on, it was like the eighth inning, and they had like one hit or two hits or something. I mean, You don't hit the ball, you can't do anything. Frank, how are you?
I'm good, but it's always a good day to be a Chicago baseball fan. You know, if it wasn't, we would have stopped rooting for baseball 30 years ago.
Baseball has been very, very good to me.
It's been nice. Okay for me, too. You know, I just have assumed they're not going to win.
Was that Garrett Morris? Keep your eye on the ball.
Huh. Garrett Morris, a name not said in the past 20 years.
He was funny though, wasn't he?
Oh, yes.
Keep your eye on the ball. Well, you know, you should do that, right? Anywho, we have the market limping along here, but seems like by the way, jobless claims 744 versus 694 estimate. I don't think anybody thought that was going to happen after the number last Friday, but right back up in that 750,000 a week, and that's not progress, but I thought we'd get a huge surprise the other way, Frank, like in the fives after last Friday with the 900,000 jobs. But whatever.
After I dug into last week's number, when you and I had our little kerfluffle about the unemployment numbers,
yep.
And it's, boy, they adjust it, and they don't tell us how they really adjust it.
Well, they
just like everything else, inflation.
Well, that's why Carl always uses the unadjusted. But you know, but in times they are a changing. I mean, I'm not. I think that is used as an excuse most of the time. But let's just say when things were traditional, just to show you how quickly or how dramatic this used to be, when in terms of the adjustment. Back when, well, I won't say when things are normal, Frank, but for a long period of time, it acted this way. Say for Christmas, you had all kinds of people that even, I mean, I knew, I won't even use the term housewives, but I'd say people who didn't have, you know, were at home taking care of
whatever, seasonal workers.
Whatever they were doing, a lot of people liked to go to work, especially in New York. Some of my friends from there, the ladies would love going to work at, like, one of the nice places like Macy's or someplace or Bloomie's, and they would work for 5 weeks, A, because they like people. They all get on the commission, you know, and because they would get like a, I don't know, 40% employee discount, they would buy all their Christmas presents at a discount and, oh, by the way, make some money and enjoy themselves for 5 weeks because they like work and they like talking to people. So there were, I think, Frank, at some point, and kick me if I'm, wasn't the adjustment in December like a quarter million people, if you didn't hire a quarter million people, you were like down. In other words, if nobody got hired or nobody got fired, the number would be minus 250 or 225 or something. That's how big the adjustment was in December, because normally that's how many people got hired in December and laid off in January. This is going back, you know, 20 years, because that happened every year, right? I mean, you get down to, I mean, if you couldn't get a job, if you wanted one, a second job, at night or on Saturday or whatever at Marshall Fields, then something was like really wrong with you. Like you didn't shower or something, right? I mean, because if you could put two words together and could add, you could work at Fields selling somebody something, even though Fields got some of the higher end guys. But you
could, well, maybe 40 years ago,
maybe. Just saying. Now you're dating.
You know, time compresses as we get older, Tom.
Yeah, and I was, by the way, since you started out on that. Is it all right, Ian, if I ask Frank about when he was alive in the St. Valentine's Day Massacre? just saying.
I did live a block away from that.
Yeah. Well, hey, now my question...
Across from Chicago Oven and Grinder on Clark
yeah.
Street.
Now,
a little north of there.
I went there years ago with John Flanagan. Isn't that the place that sells a pizza by the pound?
No, I don't know if they sold it by the pound, but they had, you know, Grinders, which is a sandwich.
Ah.
And serve an upside a pizza in a bowl.
Yeah, whatever.
If I remember.
It was different.
It's good.
All right, I have a question for you. Whenever you get into these violent times, and they come and they go, I mean, thank God they go, and it's not so thankful that they come. I mean, we've been talking, I mean, I've been more than most all over this expressway shooting stuff. And I can't even begin to think that, and everybody knows that I'm against the death penalty. I don't want anybody hurt, but I'll tell you what, you need to protect your citizens, and if anybody doesn't think that right now we need the Rat Patrol Jeep with the 50 caliber on top, and the minute somebody starts shooting out of a car in the Ryan or the Stevenson or wherever the hell you're at, that we need to level that car and just pitch the bodies home and say they're not good boys. I mean, we
should lock them up and throw away the key, but you know what? We aren't going to do it because it's going to be a gun control law.
Well, whatever it is, Frank.
They aren't going to allow us to do it, Tom.
I know, but
gun control law.
But whatever it is.
Except that number one.
I know, but whatever it is, we, at some point society reaches, that's it. I've taken the argument of, you know, gun control. Whatever the arguments are, I've absorbed all this BS for so long. Too many people are dying. We got to stop it. To me,
I agree.
To me,
you're
what happened
to the choir, Tom?
Well, to me, what happened this week at Lakeshore Drive at 1:00 p.m. where this 3-year-old kid got shot in the head. If that isn't the moment where everybody wakes up next to Monroe Harbor, people are pouring lead in a car and shooting a 3-year-old kid in the head.
Here's the kicker.
If they shot
back at the car. The first shot was shot by the 2-year-old kid's grandmother's boyfriend.
I thought you were going to say it was a 2-year-old kid.
No, it was a grandmother and her boyfriend were driving.
What I'm saying, Frank, is...
And the kid was in that car, and the guy in the car fired the first shot.
You know what, Frank? I don't even care what the details are.
Oh, I know, but it's insane.
What I'm saying is, if this isn't the day where everybody says, hey, you know what, it's one thing on the Eisenhower at 3 in the morning on a Saturday, and people are going to say, I'm never on the Eisenhower at 3 in the morning on a Saturday, so it doesn't affect me. And all of a sudden, it's 11 o'clock at night on the Dan Ryan. I'm still not on the Dan Ryan at 11. Or maybe we're starting to get 7 o'clock, 2 o'clock on I-57.
This was 11:30 in the morning, wasn't it? I mean, 11:30 a.m.
I thought it was 1. It was 1 p.m. But there isn't a soul in this city that can't say, that could be me on Lakeshore Drive at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, someday, somewhere, people got to pull their head out of their collective ass and say, this has got to stop. Lori, what are you doing?
It's just criminals. It's not guns. I understand.
Well, whatever it is.
I mean, there could be many guns.
But I'm not going with the solution. What I'm saying is the outrage should be, whatever you got to do, this has got to stop. Some combination of enforcement, more police work. I mean, as this has happened, there's less police on the expressways, not more. I mean, it's insane. Whatever it is we're doing.
The state police are supposed to be doing it. And we had a Republican governor sign away that for the
what I'm saying is, I'm trying to not even worry about the details of how we're going to do this.
How are we going to police it? That's what we need to do right now.
I don't see the outrage.
It's black people killing black people. We hear about two people getting shot in Bethesda, Maryland, when the weekend before, 7 were shot at a party in Chicago. We don't hear about it. The outrage is saved for when a white person, or especially a white girl, does.
What I'm saying is, St. Valentine's Day Massacre, nobody, in those days, the crooks, the gangsters, I think had a pretty good shot. I don't think you found too many people being shot by gangsters that weren't gangsters. So there really was not a whole lot of fear from the rest of society that you might end up getting blasted. But even then, even in those days, people said, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, you line people against the wall and you execute them.
It was just a bunch of Catholics, Irish and Italian.
I'm saying that the outrage was, this is too much. You idiots have taken it too far. What I'm saying, if 1 o'clock on Lakeshore Drive in the afternoon is not taking it too far, we've gotten so numb to this, we need to shake our heads and what they used to call it, smelling salts. We need to take a dose of smelling salts and shake our head a little bit. I mean,
Tom, it's getting absurd. These gangsters are bringing along kids when they're doing the crime. You know, the shooting in Bridgeview at the DMV, two guys drove up in a car and murdered somebody. Well, one of the guys borrowed his mother's car and brought along his 6-year-old nephew for the shooting. Now, wrap your head around that.
Well, I guess our legal system, the way it is, it sort of makes some sort of sense, but
what's wrong with the legal system?
We decide we're not going to prosecute minors, so if you get somebody under 18 shooting somebody, it's okay?
You know, my friend was working at the DMV when that happened.
Really? Well, Frank's wife works at a DMV. This is the one in Burbank?
Yeah. Well, the one right when the shooting happened in Bridgeview.
It was Bridgeview.
Oh, Bridgeview.
87th and basically Harlem.
Bridgeview, Burbank, what's the difference?
An attitude.
They're both the same, sort of the same spot, right?
Yeah.
I went to the one in Bridgeview. Boy, that's a happening place. They still do your massive parking. How did your buddy end up there, Ian?
Well, he works there. He works at the DMV. He's a clerk or something. He just started there, and he was working there one day, and then. there were shots on the street outside of the DMV, and everyone got down because they couldn't tell if it was inside or outside, and they thought, you know, it was, they were going to be the next news story, and so they were running out of the DMV, and then there was the, you know, the guy was already driving away, and there was a dead guy on the street.
You walk through the parking lot there, and there's people taking their driver's test, so you wonder if they're going to hit you. I mean, is there more stuff going on in the third of an acre that is that place, Frank, than any place else on Earth, or what?
Oh, God, all of them. You know, my wife's in Melrose. You got Midlothian. Boy, that's a trip. The worst parking lot on Earth, just at least, from a paving standpoint.
At least the one on 99th Street is kind of a standalone building with their own testing parking lot. I mean, it's somewhat sane. The one at Bridgeview's in a shopping center with all kind of, with other people coming and going for other stuff. But it's not standalone.
Midlothian's in a shopping center, too.
Really? Wow. Well, the two that I, well, when I was on my 16th birthday, I went to the one on, still remember, 99th and King Drive. And
I don't remember that. Chicago South?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There was that one.
And Chicago West is closed down because somebody, I don't know if it's the city or if it's the state, but they're doing so much road construction around there that they had to close it down because they can't give tests and people can't get there.
That's genius, isn't it? So much road construction that you have to close the driver facility. When that one probably handles, I'm going to guess that one handles more than anybody in the city.
Elston was up near the top. That used to be the most.
Okay.
I'll check in with the boss. Susan will know.
Oh, yeah, yes, she will. All right, so we've had this massive pause in the market here, Frank. We've got the VIX sliding down, but not dropping out of sight. It's it's down to 16.897. It's down another, so it's under 17. We've got the bonds pausing. The rates seem to have locked in here at this 165. Is this the eye of the hurricane, or what is this? Or all of a sudden, are we just happy where we are here?
Yeah, but the futures are pretty high in the VIX, though, right now. So they aren't showing the same weakness.
Well, if you're trading for people like I am every day, any buy order that you put in there is eagerly chomped on. Any sell order, nobody wants it. So clearly the investing public has become option sellers, which is why the VIX is down. I mean, for those of you that think this, and we have a couple of people on the show that are VIX geniuses, and I learned from them, and I hope everybody else does as well, but it's really pretty simple. You start out in the pit, and you've got a buy side and a sell side, and as the orders come in during the day, if 80% of them are sells, your VIX goes down, and if every 80% are buy, it goes up, right, Frank? I mean, it's the world dictates the VIX.
Bottom line, the VIX measures the amount of extrinsic value of any option, or that value, right, which is not related to the pure value of the option.
Well, I put a lot of money to work in the last few days, and I've been getting cheaper put prices than I have in quite a while. Now, I'll try and sell the call side, though. That's a struggle. I mean, nobody wants to, even if you try and sell some for 30 cents, nobody wants to buy it. I mean, stuff is just going out worthless all over the place. We had a client, or several clients, have a position in Nokia, Frank. And on Friday afternoon, we had a weekly expiration. The stock's $4, right? At 2:45, the stock is going back and forth between $4 and $4.01. Both the calls and the puts are at a penny. I'm like, you gotta be bleeping me.
I was the guy who would buy them for a penny.
Yeah, and then what? And then you can exercise when you do them.
I know.
Yeah.
I was usually closing. Or just in case, I'd walk up and see where it was at 3:29.
Well, I have a client that said, I'm short these things and I want to roll out to the next week. How about trying to buy them at 2 cents? And I'm thinking, you know, I wonder. I said, why don't we do something stupid and be a penny bid? Sure enough, we get filled. When the thing's trading 401, and we get filled at a penny. I mean, there's no chance somebody's going to show up and drive the stock to 402. I mean, it's,
or 405.
Well, yeah. I mean, try 403, but the world told you there was none, Frank. So whatever's happening, the market's now telling you, where are we? You know, April, what are we, the 10th or the 9th? And we are Thursday the 8th. They're telling you that in the next week or two, everything's okay. Now, there was a time when you and I would always fade that. But right now, the world is telling you nothing's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. And it sure seems...
The world has not been kind to faders for the past 4 years.
No. So what do you... We've got stuff happening. We've got bonds. Are we going to continue to go down? Right now it appears we've reached a plateau. We've bounced back a little bit. We've got European markets. I have no idea how the hell they're still got negative rates in Germany, but they do. We've got gold prices steady but not going anywhere. We've got inflation hawks starting to pop up everywhere. We've got the Fed trying to hide the money supply from you and put Milton Friedman dead if he wasn't already dead. We've got markets. All of a sudden yesterday the FANGs were back in focus and they were all way up. So the five stocks that led us last year and then didn't lead us this year, pissing off a lot of clients because they're Apple.
And the government's hiding historical statistics from us.
Right, without a doubt. And we've got all kind of, in the midst of this whole mess, we've got essentially a market like not doing much. And you look at some of these individual numbers and they're bizarre. And all of a sudden people now are saying, you know, what the Fed's doing is crazy, what it's not doing. Do we just start up again or is everything okay? We got people coming back to work. The debt load is dramatic. Is it just going to end up being the usual every 12-year shift from a lot of people that used to have money to a lot of people that now have money, Frank? We do that every 12 years, it seems.
I have no idea. I mean, I'm befuddled.
Well, you read some of these plans the government's come out with in terms of who gets the plan. I mean, and the idea with the Employee Retention Act and the second PPP, it's very clear, you know, who wrote the articles or wrote the laws. And when they come out with this infrastructure program, there's going to be people that end up with just a real lot of other people's money. I just don't know where they're going to get it off, Frank.
I think we could say some of the names, except if I did, since we're local, I'm sure I'd end up getting sued.
Well, locally, it's always... There's people that have been in like a tick on a dog for a long period of time, and you're going to name the five construction companies, maybe more like three or four, and those guys are going to end up with the stuff. The problem is they already have so much stuff. I mean, how do you even extend the work out? I mean, look at what's going on in the Bourne Interchange. I mean, it's literally going to be what, 12 years, 11?
Oh, it's I will die before they're done with that, and I could live another 20 years.
Well, but how many people do they have working on it on a given day? 20? 25?
Three?
I mean, it's... Are they...
Well, you have to have two people to slow down the traffic, you know, with the stop and slow signs.
Well, that's right. But you...
And one guy with a shovel or a broom.
Well, some of these projects, if you talk about them, and I real quickly, for those of you that have never been on the Illinois River and going through like the D. I had a fascinating day one day. We did a barge tour, right? And we went through one of the big, huge lock and dams. And the only lock and dam I'd ever been through before, Frank, was the... Well, I went through two. I went through the one downtown and the one out by on the Kelsack Channel. And what? On a bad day, you're going up, what, foot and a half, 3 feet or down?
Mm-hmm.
Well... The ones in the Illinois River, it's what? It's 150 feet or 200. You're at the bottom of this thing going, wait a minute. They're going to fill this thing up with water and we're going to the top of this? It's unreal if you've never done it. You're sitting there going, they better not put this water in too fast or people better not tie this boat to the side too tight if we don't go up.
You better have a long rope.
You better have a long rope is right. So all these things were built during the Depression. And, you know, and we haven't... And they were talking about how every one of them in the state needs to be essentially redone at some point. And how every one of them is like a fiber because you have to go around the old one. But they're talking about every one you do, and there's five or six of them or something. Every one of them you do is like something like 1.8 million carpenter hours. Just carpenter hours, Frank. Not even talking about iron workers and people like that. And these are massive projects. Now, if you actually plan one of them out and fixed a couple of these things... At some point, we're talking about, obviously they did a pretty good job during the Depression when they built them in the first place, but it's not like we don't need some of this work done. I mean, question is, are we just going to piss it away? I don't know. Anyway, Frank, this week we're up 11, it's Wednesday, actually it's Thursday. What do you think for the rest of the week? We stay bullish?
There's no reason not to be bullish.
I would agree.
I said that last week. I said new highs.
All right, bud.
Where we went.
All right,
so
bud.
It's, nothing's happening, but we're at all-time highs. Go
yep.
figure.
All right, well, what do you mean? You're putting money in every day. Have a nice weekend, Frank. I'll talk to you
okay.
on Monday. SP Futures up 12. NASDAQ Futures up 112. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.